You are listening to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, with your host, Randy Sutton. Welcome to this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on the America Out Loud Network. I'm your host, Randy Sutton. We have a ton of stuff to talk about today in the briefing room, which we're just about to go into. And then I have a great guest for you as well, because we only bring you top quality guests. And we talk about all the news about law enforcement here on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. So let's take a walk into the briefing room. And I'm going to tell you my view from the blue. Well, hot off the presses, a news story came out that is already causing protests and more and more anti-law enforcement sentiment going on in New York City. The Department of Justice, United States Department of Justice, has ruled that the department will not be filing charges involving a civil rights complaint against the officer who was involved with Eric Garner's death in New York. Now, just to refresh your memory, this is a five-year-old case. 5 years old, this investigation has been going on. One of the officers that responded to the complaint about Eric Garner. Now, let me refresh your memories. Eric Garner was a very large, obese black man who was selling what they called, they were single cigarettes in a neighborhood in New York City. The police had gotten a number of complaints about him from the business owners, that he was harassing people, things like that. This was a common complaint with involving him. So officers went to engage him, and they were going to take an enforcement action, probably just a citation. But Garner refused to cooperate and was placed under arrest. And once placed under arrest, he began fighting with the police. Now, he's a very, very large man. Something like 6'6", 360 pounds. He was a big guy. And when the fight was on, the fight was on. And it all of the officers that were there were much, much smaller than him. And while they're trying to get him into custody, one of the officers, an officer Pantaleo, jumped up from behind him to drag him down to the ground so that they could get him handcuffed. Now, this was being photographed by people's cell phone cameras, of course. And immediately, what happened was Garner, who had suffered all kinds of medical conditions, said, "I can't breathe." And the next thing you know, this officer is being accused of putting a chokehold on him. So Garner expires during the arrest. It turns out that he has heart condition and diabetes and asthma, and from the exertion, he suffered an asthma attack and died as a result. Well, the autopsy showed that, but the word was already out on the street that the police killed this poor man, that they choked him to death, and the rallying cry was, "I can't breathe." The reality is that every investigation that resulted from this, the grand jury refused to indict, the criminal investigation resulted in no charges, and now after 5 years of investigation, the Department of Justice said the same thing, that there is no evidence against this officer, so there will be no charges. But that will certainly not satisfy the protesters and the mother of Eric Garner, who has claimed that this was a, quote, thrill kill by the police. So once again, law enforcement is blamed for someone who simply refused to comply. And because of his refusal to comply, his physical attack on law enforcement, failing to just comply with their request to take a ticket, result in his death. It isn't law enforcement's fault. law enforcement did what they had to do. They tried to subdue this individual. And during this this altercation, his physical health was so poor that he died as a result. This call for justice, quote unquote, is more and more of what we are hearing on any police-involved death. It happened just the other day in Fullerton, California, where a female sped by a police car and then intentionally rammed her car into the police car. The officer went to go in pursuit. The female driver made a U-turn into oncoming traffic and jumped out of the car. As the officer goes to apprehend her, he walks around the car and she's standing there pointing a gun at him. He opens fire, he kills her. Turns out that this is a replica weapon. It is not a real gun, although it is absolutely identical. Well, it turns out that this is a 17-year-old girl who had a black father, Hispanic mother. From looking at her, you would have no concept that she was of any other race other than Caucasian, because that's what she appeared to be. But right away, the protests start. The calls for justice, and I'm using that term very loosely, comes from politicians, from social justice warriors, and the police department released the video film of the shooting. And even that had to shut up the people who literally, you walked right through and you saw that she was pointing this gun at this cop. And but there's still people out there right now saying that it was an unnecessary killing, that it was another senseless death of a person of color at the hands of the police. So Eric Garner's situation, the officer involved in this, Pantaleo, has been literally in isolation. He's had his gun taken away, his badge taken away. He's been assigned to desk duty for years because of this. The reality is Officer Pantaleo did nothing wrong. And he is once again another law enforcement victim of this insanity that is going on concerning the blaming of law enforcement for simply everything. While we're talking about this, how the war on cops is progressing, there's another high-profile fatal shooting that came out not too long ago. This was in South Bend. Now, remember, this is where Mayor Pete is running for president. So a white officer, a sergeant, Ryan O'Neill, fatally shot a suspect who tried to stab him. Now, he did not have his body camera on at the time. So what this officer was now being subjected to incredible amounts of harassment by the media. He's been dragged through the mud. He's been accused of murder. They're going to charge him. It's just been insane. And old Mayor Pete, of course, being the politician that he is, he's certainly not going to do anything to step up to the plate and call for, calm and actually, let's wait for an investigation before we vilify somebody. So this officer, sergeant, has just been literally, death threats, everything. Well, he just quit. He just resigned from the police department. And he gave as a reason. He did it through the union, through the Fraternal Order of Police. And he said that he attributed this because of the stress, the national media attention, a lawsuit filed by the family, and hateful things said on social media. And here's what the statement from the FOP, Fraternal Order of Police. Sergeant O'Neill did his job and was forced to defend his own life from a convicted felon who was armed with an 8-inch hunting knife. Harvey Mills, the FOP president, said in the release, "We're confident the investigation into the shooting will determine that the action he took was justified based on the law and his training." There is no doubt that once again, this police officer is front and center at the war on cops. And why, you know, these officers in South Bend, Indiana, I think he's probably making about, I don't know, $45,000-$50,000 a year, putting his life on the line for peanuts, really. And why should he take this? Why should he be subject himself and his family to this type of insanity? And this is what law enforcement is facing every single day in America now. This is an injustice. The injustice isn't geared for the people who are resisting arrest, who are attacking law enforcement and getting the consequences that go along with such actions. Everything is geared against the police, and the media is in a frenzy. They love to vilify the American law enforcement officer, and this is backfiring now on the communities, because what is happening? Cops aren't people aren't becoming cops, first of all. In fact, there's a story right now, just came out. Baltimore police launch, quote, comeback story recruitment campaign. That's interesting. You all know that Baltimore's police agents department has had the worst leadership from the city government to the police department literally for years now. It is a massive screw-up, that entire every police commissioner and police chief. Some have been arrested, some have been tossed out of office because of their conduct. It's been whoever's making the decisions in Baltimore has really dropped the ball literally for years. So the new police commissioner, Michael Harrison, and Mayor Bernard Jack Young announced a new $200,000 marketing campaign on Monday. A marketing campaign, because they can't hire any cops. Nobody wants to work for them. They think a marketing campaign is going to be the answer to their prayer. Well, the reality is nobody wants to work for them because of the incompetence in the leadership in the city. The cops aren't getting paid anything. They're so short-staffed that they're mandatory overtime, working hours and hours and hours more than they should be. And the working conditions suck. So how about addressing that? How about putting some good leadership in play here instead of pissing away money on marketing campaigns? So the last thing I want to talk about today is this headline. Disabled retired officers ordered to return to work or lose their pensions in North Chicago, Illinois. This is absolutely astounding. Eight former North Chicago police officers who retired on disability after being injured in the line of duty have been ordered to become 911 dispatchers for the department or face losing their pensions. These guys have been retired now for years, and suddenly they're being threatened to lose their pensions if they don't come back to work. I've never heard of any insanity like this. This is exactly why I created our organization, the Wounded Blue, because of this type of literally maltreatment by city governments of injured and disabled law enforcement officers. This is an outrage, and I hope that the right now there's a appeal process taking place, and I hope that the police pension board does the right thing here, because to require disabled police officers after they are retired to come back to work or face losing their pensions is an injustice of the highest order. We got a great guest waiting for us in the interview room. I want to tell you guys about a pretty amazing product. It's called Arrest My Vest Spray. And really what it's designed to do is when you are wearing a ballistic vest, you know, it gets sweaty, it gets hot, it gets drenched, you know, from working out in the street. And sometimes it doesn't smell all that well. And this is an amazing product that takes that odor away. And you don't even have to use it just for the vest. It takes pet odors away. It's great for your vest. It's great for your dog bed. Everything else that you need a deodorizer for, This stuff is amazing. Check it out. It's at stinkyvest.com. Go to stinkyvest.com and check out Arrest My Vest Spray and arrest the odors. I want to tell you about a company called Law Enforcement Specialists. If you are an active duty law enforcement officer and you're looking to work extra jobs like security and traffic jobs, these are the people you need to go through. We all know that working extra jobs is what gives us the extras, gives us that little extra payment that we need, or perhaps gives us the opportunity to take our families out to dinner a little more often. And the only way to do it is to be working extra jobs. So what they do is they're all over America. I think they're in everything but a couple of states. And they work with your organization, your administration, and find off-duty jobs to work. You got to check them out. Go to offdutypoliceofficers.com. That's offdutypoliceofficers.com and register with them, contact them. Now, if you have security needs, this is the company you want to go through as well. If you are looking for both security or traffic jobs, if you have a company that requires that, you want to contact these folks as well. They're good people. They're based in Arizona, but they have police officers and services all over the country. Go to offdutypoliceofficers.com.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep, but it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the People, AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
I have a very special guest with me in the interview room of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. He's an old friend and a good friend. His name is John Krupinski. John has been a police officer for, I hate to tell you how many years this is, 37 years. And not only is he a law enforcement officer, he is also the president of the Connecticut State Fraternal Order of Police. He is a huge contributor to law enforcement. But besides that, He gives back in other ways, too. He is actually the assistant coach to a professional hockey team in Connecticut, the Danbury Hat Tricks. And it's that in that role that he has made internet fame just the last few days with a video that went viral about patriotism. John, thanks so much for being on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement.
Glad to be here, Randy, and you are the man when it comes to speaking out and backing us up. So anything I can do for you, more than happy to be here. Great show.
I appreciate that, man. I appreciate it. So, okay, let's talk about what the limelight that you have found yourself in, probably unexpectedly, in your position as the assistant coach of the Danbury Hat Tricks. I reached out to you because I was just going through my Facebook stuff, and suddenly I see you on a video that has gone viral, and people were sending your video to me saying, this guy is telling it like it is. And what I saw was you talking about patriotism. to this team. Tell us about how that happened and the resulting notoriety, if you will.
Well, you know, I never really expected this video to go viral like that. You know, a locker room talk with your players. I would have expected one of my Police Week videos maybe viral before this. you know, this people. Some people have read into it a little more than it is. Of course, you know, we got some snowflakes on there screaming and yelling. But it was just a basic talk with the players about, you know, what we expect and about showing respect. And if you notice in the video, it's about, I said, both anthems. How I expect players to react and how I expect players to stand and what I expect players to be doing with the national anthem playing. And it's both Canadian and American. I wasn't getting in all of this political views and all of this stuff. It was simply saying, look, when they're playing the national anthem of both countries, you're expected to be there and you're expected to do the right thing. And if anybody can't handle that, they can leave in some other words that I used. It's just that simple. It's what do we expect? What do we want? And if you were to violate that, what's going to happen? Just couldn't be any clearer. Coaching is sort of like policing. You have to give clear, concise commands, and you expect them to be followed. If not, there's consequences.
I love that simple philosophy, John. I really do. And I watched, it was a short video. I think it was about a minute and a half or something like that. It wasn't a long video, but you got your point across.
40 seconds or so.
40 seconds.
I mean, you know, that was clearly, you know, that's the first morning of camp. These are kids coming in to try out for the team. Two things. There's certainly no sense in me wasting any time with anybody that would be immediately ejected, so I'd rather have them leave in the morning. Secondly, we don't have that problem in hockey. But I don't think enough coaches in sports reinforce those things. I just recently came across a coach of a very young Little League team addressing his team about how to hold their hat and how to place it over their heart during the national anthem. That's awesome. These are the things that we should be doing with youth, children, and even right up to adults that I'm dealing with. If you're in a position in a sporting event, you just have to continually reinforce these things. Hockey's never had any issues. We don't have any people doing any of the stupid stuff. But it doesn't hurt to reinforce it. And it also instills discipline of, hey, you know, when a coach speaks, this is what he wants. Sometimes in hockey, it's like policing. Don't have time to explain. I just got to tell you to do it and you got to go do it. If they can't understand those simple concepts, then you're probably not going to win a championship.
that's for sure. So the Danbury Hat Tricks, I don't really follow hockey, but this is a professional hockey team, is it not?
It is. It's single A hockey. Let's face facts in life. I know my position. We are the last line of pro hockey. If you don't make it in the NHL, the AHL, the East Coast League, the SP, then you're down to the FHL. And if you don't make it here, you're back to playing men's league. But we have had a bunch of call-ups. We get some younger players sometime that are really do well, and they get called up. Last year we had 28 players called up between the East Coast League, Southern Pro League, and one call-up to the AHL. So guys have the opportunity to move up to the leagues they actually want to be in if they play well.
How long have you been involved in hockey?
It's been, for me now, about 15, 18 years, somewhere around there.
Wow, so you really love this game.
Yeah, for me, it's a little bit of relaxing time when you get out of work. You know, we have a stressful job all day. Guys like to relieve their stress in different manners. I can have a real bad day at work. I can get in the arena, get on the ice with the players. It's just relaxing to me. It's a great time. And it's fan interaction. We have some of the greatest fans in the world in hockey. I love these videos where, you know, in Canada, the microphone in the United States national anthem went out halfway through. The Canadian fans in the packed arena sang the rest of the song. I mean, that's the kind of things I like to be involved in.
Absolutely, that's for sure. Well, I think that there's a valuable lesson to be learned here, and that is that when we become singularly dimensional, especially in law enforcement can become an all-consuming job. And we have seen over and over again that when you don't have any way to another outlet for your relaxation, for your emotions, that can be really damaging. So I applaud the fact that you have found something that you love to do, and you do it, and you understand how it probably makes you a better human being and a better cop at the same time.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it is a release. It with all the PTSD out there, you need other avenues, and I would hope more law enforcement officers would do things, whatever it is they love. It might be from painting a picture to golf to whatever takes you out of that zone, that police zone. And trust me, I'm in it. SWAT, dive team. I've been involved in all of the tough stuff, but it's nice to just escape for 60 minutes during that game. I honestly don't think about law enforcement. It's strictly about the game, and it's a great release. And, you know, one thing I would hope anybody would learn from this is a coach should never be able to be worried about saying what he means and meaning what he says. I don't think we see enough of that now. I hear a lot of people say in private these types of things, but, you know, they won't go out into the public and say it. Hey, I don't apologize to anyone for saying you need to be respectful for a national anthem, no matter what country it's from.
I couldn't agree more. And I think, you know, your timing couldn't have been better, considering this insanity with Nike and Colin Kaepernick, and suddenly the Betsy Ross flag is no longer something to be respected, that it's become a racist symbol. It's mind-boggling to me. So Nike is one of the, you know, a huge corporation. They make business decisions based on business, right? And then
One would think, but you have to question that lately.
Yeah, exactly. And suddenly, I mean, Colin Kaepernick decrees that a flag is racist and a company bows to it. Tell me, is it me, or is this something mind-boggling that you could never conceive of happening a couple years ago?
No, I mean, any American flag, it's just crazy that and still yet to this day, I haven't heard a legitimate explanation as to why the Betsy Ross flag is racist. I'm seeing more to the point that she was more non-racist and helped slaves and whatnot in the past. I don't know where this is coming from. I would really love to hear some sort of an explanation as to why, but I don't know if anyone else out there has heard it. I have not heard a legitimate explanation on that yet.
It doesn't appear that any legitimate explanation needs to be given. A decree is made assigning a racist label by Kaepernick, who is, in my estimation, nothing but a loser, over a major company like that and public opinion. Just incredible.
I absolutely agree on that. I mean, the question is, why does this company go out of its way to listen to this guy? I understand if the company signs somebody to wear their sneakers or this or that, but, I mean, where could this possibly come from, this whole idea that the original American flag was racist?
I couldn't agree more. So let's go put your police hat back on. You've been a cop for 37 years, and your position, you're in Connecticut, but in addition to doing police work, you're also the president of the entire state of Connecticut's Fraternal Order of Police. You know, not everybody knows what the FOP is. So if you would, just give a brief explanation about what the FOP is and what the role that it plays in law enforcement.
For me, it goes way back. I'll be honest with you. Connecticut, the FOP was very small some years ago, and I wasn't familiar with it a lot. I became acquainted with the FOP through Police Week. A lot of people don't realize that it's the FOP that puts on Police Week. I always thought it was the government. It was, you know, the White House. But it's the FOP that puts it on. And the more I learned about the organization, the more I liked it. That's why I came back. I started a chapter in Danbury. I was the president there and then moved on to become the state president, which has put me in a great position to get some of the values out there. And I have some wonderful, wonderful members in Connecticut. We're up to 16 lodges now here, about 1,600 members. And we do a lot of other things. The FOP is a vast, it is a union. It is a fraternal organization, both. It really encompasses a lot of things. There's we go from representing the membership. The FOP is the largest police organization in the United States. There's a lot of different unions that are all put together, but we are the largest. We do have a pretty good voice at the White House. We have always had for many, many years. Our national president now has just taken the job, waiting for him to be confirmed as the ATF director. Those are pretty nice credentials to get things done. And there's certainly a lot of things that we get done politically and socially. Some of the things I'm most proudest of is that during Christmas, the FOP makes available to all 50 states brand spanking new toys in the box to be distributed to lower income families and housing projects. We all drive from all over the country. We drive to Philadelphia with box trucks. The Philadelphia State Lodge loads up our trucks. I brought about 750 toys back to Connecticut last year.
Wow.
And they were distributed in the lowest of low income housing, where children, bottom line, would not have had a Christmas at all. And that's one of the things I'm really proud of. That's why I got a kick. You know, just because I make a speech, you got to be respectful to the anthem. Of course, some people immediately called me a racist. A lot of them have no idea as to, you know, what the things that I've done. And that's one of them that I'm really, really proud of, that the FOP makes Christmas. And a lot of these families that came in, you know, grandma would come in and I know the daughter's a junkie or she's a heroin user or she's in jail, and really grab the cops and hug them and thank them, because these are the only gifts that those kids are going to get. So those are some of the things we do. We respond to national disasters. Anytime there's a national disaster, the president will usually put out, a tweet. Hey, we got to head to New Orleans. Hey, we got to head to California. Hey, we got to head to Florida. Hey, we got to head to New York City. And the vast majority of all the membership will answer that call immediately. Just an absolute great organization.
I want to go back to something that you mentioned, because it's critically important that we talk about this. And that is, you know, the media hypes up the divide between law enforcement, the black community. But those of us who worked in the black community have seen an entirely different side. And this was backed up by a study just a year ago, I believe, a major study. And that is that people in the black community like and respect their law enforcement officers on a degree that far, far outweighs the decrying of the racist police. I mean, that's from my experience. I understand this, and from your experience working in inner city areas, that's one of the things that I think we should make an effort to let people know what the realities are, and that is that people in all communities respect law enforcement on a far greater level than is being portrayed.
You're not going to make all of the people in every community happy, but I really agree with you when you say, what is the media portray to actually what we have? I got to tell you, in Danbury, when I say we have zero problems in our community, in our low-income community, in the housing projects, the relationship that we have between our community and the police department, I believe, is second to none. I posted a video last week. I don't know if you saw it. I happen to be the day shift commander. I'm driving by the project. Little kids are out playing basketball. They wave me down because they all know me. I get out of the car and say, what's up, guys? They said, hey, my basketball rim is broke. Would you help sign our petition to get a new basketball rim up? We haven't been able to play a full court game the whole summer. I said, hang on, guys. We'll do a little bit better than that. Give me 20 minutes. Went over to Dick's, got a new rim, got some of the guys down. They brought the SWAT truck out with the ladders. We changed the rim, put it up, and in 25 minutes. And let me tell you, is it a small gesture? It was really done just to help the kids out so they could play a game. But as we started doing that, everybody started coming out of their houses. And these are people I've arrested. Many, many, many were criminals. But just because they're criminals don't mean they're bad people. It means, hey, they made a mistake. I did my job. They did their job. It's nothing personal. And one thing I always try to tell the new kids is this job should never be personal. They all came out. Guys are offering us Gatorade water. It was like 90 degrees out there that day. Couple of homeless people, something interesting. We're fixing up the rim. A couple of homeless people show up with shovels, brooms, and a bucket, and they're on the court sweeping things up. In a 3-minute period, we instilled some pride in the community. And we agreed with them that we'd come back August 10th. They have their block party at that project. August 10th, I'll be there with the FOP grill cooking burgers and dogs that we'll donate to them. That's the kind of relationship that we have with our community. And, you know, once in a while it gets questioned. Some guys will say to me, hey, what are we doing this for? Well, here's a classic example. New Year's Eve, the club down the street, which generally all these folks will go to, has a huge, huge fight. I had 15 cops working as 400 people fighting. A girl got cut with a bottle. We've obviously got to make some arrests. You can't let that salt second walk. We go in there and start doing what we got to do. And even I started getting pushed around a little bit. Immediately, the people that put on this barbecue every summer. And again, these are not the pillars of the community. I think I've arrested probably half of them. All immediately came running in, pushed the people back and said, hey, what's wrong with you guys? These guys are good guys. They're just doing their job. That's the type of outcome you can get when you do these little things. And just maybe my hopes are that before someone pulls the trigger on a cop, they just might remember one of these acts of kindness and change their mind. And it's never bad to have good communication between anybody. I think we've learned that with North Korea and America lately. Communication is a good thing. And I would ask the officers all over the country, hey, step up, do the right thing. It doesn't make you a random act of kindness is free. Be kind to people.
You know, what you're talking about is something that you've got 37 years on the job. You've got the experience level. You know, everybody, when they come on the police job, they evolve as time goes by. You know, I don't think anybody walks out of the job the same way they walked into it. But what you're talking about is the wisdom of years. And there is no substitute for time-honored wisdom. And it's so valuable when it comes down to your experience, what you've accomplished, what you have seen and done in your career. Passing that legacy on to younger officers, to less experienced officers, is something that is absolutely vital. And I think, unfortunately, as we see more and more police officers leaving the job earlier than they normally would because of the societal issues facing them now, we're facing a diminishment of that wisdom. And I think we're gonna suffer because of it.
Oh, there's clearly no question about that. And, you know, this is a subject we were just talking about when we're all sitting around it. We remembered the guys that took us under their wing when they came on. And then as we moved up through the ranks, it seemed to be less and less. And then the next one day we woke up and we looked around and said, wow, we're that guy now. But there's not enough of us.
Yeah.
You know, I was very fortunate. I just want to point out to the audience that Randy said I was a cop for 37 years, but I was a cop at 19, a very young age. And at 19, I got to tell you, I certainly was not the cop that I am today. I did a lot of stupid things. As most rookies do, I think the question is, how fast do you mature? But the only way to do that is by some senior guys putting their arm around me, and many, many did. Sergeant Salazar, who's retired for many years now, I still see at the FOP meetings, and you know, he still shakes his head, and we laugh and joke about when he was a new sergeant and I was a new patrolman. But it was guys like him, who Medal of Valor winner, been in shootouts, that took me under his wing and kind of guided me towards the right direction. And it's always a combination of the two. You're not going to guide everybody in the right direction, but I do believe 99.9% of the guys can be led in a direction with good, proper training. Lately, I think across America, from when, if you remember, Rand, when we were on the job in the 80s, early 90s even, training was huge. It really seems to be fading off. I'm not seeing as big a push for training anymore. They want us to act a certain way, but they don't want to train us to that level anymore. It just seems that's across the country. And you get what results what you put into something.
You brought up this is a really, really hot topic and something that I'm very, very concerned about. And that is, we are seeing much more violence being directed towards law enforcement officers than I think I can remember in many, many years. I mean, literally, we hear of a police officer being shot or shot at literally every single day now. These officers are facing a great deal of danger, and yet, you hit it right in the head. I'm seeing a diminishment of the proper training. When I say proper training, I mean training that gives them a tactical advantage when it comes down to physical violence, gunfights, street survival, in essence. And I'm seeing a diminishment of that for much more politically correct training I find that not only offensive, but I find it dangerous.
I absolutely agree with you. I mean, you know, we've seen many riots now where the police departments have been ordered by mayors to stand down. One thing I would talk about a little bit is an old timer. And, you know, we had some different tools of the trade back then. You know, blackjacks were readily available, straight batons that we used in a little more aggressive manner. I love my taser, and please don't take this out of context, anybody. I love my taser. It is my first go-to weapon. If I can tase somebody, get them cuffed up, and be done with it, it's awesome. And it works 99% of the time. One thing I'm seeing with the younger kids who've never been really involved in a stand-up, let's fight it out hand-to-hand, mm-hmm. is when that fails, we're seeing, oh, my God, what do I do now? Because I don't think we're investing our time any longer in the hand-to-hand defensive tactics, control and restraint, pressure points, takedowns. I've seen that trend go away from law enforcement, at least from my views. And I think that's really bad when it comes down to, hey, we're going to have to slug this one out. I don't think the officers have enough of that training behind them anymore. You remember back in the 80s, we all called in sick one time to go to New Jersey to go to a Caliber Press training conference because Caliber Press was new at the time. Guys were paying out of their pocket and yearning to go to these training programs. And I'm just not seeing that anymore. I see guys worrying about working a road job on their day off instead of maybe attending training when they could.
Well, not only that, but I have seen and written about and spoken about on this program, some police agencies actually denying the training that you're talking about to officers. In fact, in some cases, canceling it when it was already scheduled. And there was one mayor who said that they weren't even allowed to go on their off-duty time. This is in Minneapolis. I mean, some of the hysteria that surrounds law enforcement training is mind-boggling, and it's true. This is what's happening.
Yeah, I saw that too. They said they're not allowed to have any type of tactical training. I don't want to disappoint the guy, but tactical is what we do when we go to work every day. But this is where we're at in this day and age. Sadly, this job has changed. I'm sure you've seen it. I'm still experiencing it every day. It's changed, and I won't say a lot of it is for the better. Some good things have changed, and I think there are some things that are better. But if I had to vote on it, I would say the vast majority of it weren't for the better. Unfortunately, we are putting guys in 2019 in positions that they were never in 1980 and should never be in. Guys have to protect themselves. So if it's a less than lethal situation, it's less than lethal. But if it's a lethal situation, you know, it just shocks me when I hear this stuff of guys with guns, guys with knives, guys with pipes. Oh, why didn't you tase them? Because that's not the game he was playing with me.
Yeah, exactly. Well, there is a huge disconnect in the context that most people, they get their information about the way they think police should act from the media and from the movies and from television. The realities are far, far different. And I think that maybe, you know, that's actually some of our fault as law enforcement that we don't, we haven't educated our community as well, and so there's an expectation, I think, that comes into play, and there's this, you know, there's a reality check for cops. We know what we have to do, but unfortunately, they're falling prey as well to the political correctness. I saw a videotape the other day that I shuddered. This suspect chasing an officer with a knife, and the officer literally begging him to stop. Please don't come near me, please. And the guy, finally, the guy charged the officer who shot him. But then the guy got up and came after him again, and he didn't shoot him again, and he got stabbed. Now, this is one of those things that I'm looking at him going, why aren't you shooting this guy who's... And I can't help but think that we are breeding hesitation into our officers, which is killing our cops.
You hit the nail right on the head. Guys are afraid to do their job. That's what it comes down to. They're afraid to do their job. They're afraid to be the poster boy for the news. They're afraid to be the poster boy on the front page of the newspaper because they shot the guy. They are terrified to do their jobs because in some cities they're not getting the support that they need.
And I think that, I mean, when you think about in your position as the FOP president, one thing that I can say, the Fraternal Order of Police has literally saved the lives of many, many police officers and their careers because of their legal defense fund and their backing of these officers. Of all the things that a police union can do to help, I think the FOP has done a remarkable job. I know personally a number of officers who owe their careers and almost their lives to the Fraternal Order of Police. And we're running out of time. We've really run a lot of topics here, and I appreciate you, you know, taking the time to stop over here in the interview room. But one of the things I got to say, I loved your viral video. You said it the way it is, that we need to respect our flag and our anthem and the anthem of other countries. I really hold you in very, very high regard for your efforts over the decades of service to your community. I appreciate John Krupinski coming on to the Voice of American Law Enforcement.
Randy, thank you very much for having me here. It's always great to see you. And it's always great to be with a friend of law enforcement. You know, guys, I mean, I did one small part. This guy is out there every day speaking for us. And we do appreciate it, Randy, what you're doing for us. So thank you, my brother.
I appreciate it, John. Thank you, and we'll talk again soon.
Spreading the outlaw truth from sea to shining sea. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. We are the vision of the voices. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
As former law enforcement officers, we know that your life and the lives of those you love and work with can change in an instant when you encounter an active shooter.
Unfortunately, in today's world of uncertainty, encountering an armed active shooter can have deadly consequences. That's why the key to survival is training and preparedness.
And that's why we want to invite our listeners to seriously consider taking our Response to Active Shooter training course.
Violence can happen to you anytime and anywhere and when you least expect it. Having a response and survival plan and engaging it can be the difference between life and death for you or a family member.
Our Response to Active Shooter courses are customized for the corporate, school, church, restaurant, and small business environment at a reasonable budget that fits your needs.
So don't put this life-saving training off because you don't think it will ever happen to you. We call those people victims.
Our Response to Active Shooter instructors are all nationally renowned tactical law enforcement experts who will guide you through the life-saving protocols you'll need to survive an active shooter event.
So be a victor, not a victim. Go to responsetoactiveshooter.com to learn more today.
Remember, that's all one word, responsetoactiveshooter.com and be safe out there.
End of Watch with Randy Sutton.
Each week on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, we have the duty and the honor to pay respects to the men and women of our law enforcement profession who have made the ultimate sacrifice and passed away in the line of duty. The first name this week is who is... Okay, I fucked that all out of them. Each week on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, we feel that we have the duty and the honor to share with you the names of the officers who have given their lives in the line of duty and made the ultimate sacrifice for their communities. We call it End of Watch. I have two names to read. The first is Deputy Sheriff Nicholas Blaine Dixon of the Hull County Sheriff's Office in Georgia. Deputy Sheriff Nicholas Dixon was shot and killed following a vehicle pursuit of a stolen vehicle at approximately 11:15 p.m. The vehicle was believed to have been connected to several burglaries and car break-ins over the previous days. A vehicle pursuit started when deputies attempted to stop it. Multiple suspects then fled on foot after the car crashed. Deputy Dixon pursued one of the suspects and exchanged shots with him in the 600 block of Highland Avenue. Deputy Dixon was fatally shot during the exchange and the subject seriously wounded. A second suspect was apprehended approximately 8 hours later, while additional suspects remain at large. One of the men who was taken into custody was charged with murder. Deputy Dixon served with the Hull County Sheriff's Office for 3 years. He is survived by his wife and two sons. Deputy Sheriff Nicholas Blaine Dixon, Hull County Sheriff's Office, Georgia. End of Watch, Sunday, July 7th, 2019. The second law enforcement officer to give his life in the line of duty is Conservation Officer Shannon Lee Opie Barron of the Red Lake Nation Conservation Department Tribal Police. Shannon Lee Barron, the conservation officer, suffered a fatal heart attack while investigating an illegal harvesting call off Highway 89 north of Red Lake. He and other officers had just cleared from the call when he radioed dispatch requesting EMS for himself. The other officers returned and immediately began performing life-saving measures. He was transported to Red Lake Indian Health Service Hospital, where he was pronounced dead. Officer Barron has served with the Red Lake Nation Conservation Department for 19 years. He is survived by his wife, two children, and the aunt who raised him. Conservation Officer Shannon Lee Barron, Red Lake Nation Conservation Department, Tribal Police. End of Watch, Sunday, July 7th, 2019. May they rest in peace. I want to thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on the America Out Loud Network. We try to bring you the truth about the American law enforcement officer and the stories that are written and reported about them. I also would love for you to come onto Facebook and look me up under the voice of American law enforcement, like me, follow me. And if you haven't, please check out the website that goes along with our organization, The Wounded Blue. It's thewoundedblue.org. This is a charitable organization that assists injured and disabled law enforcement officers. And if you haven't seen our film, go to either iTunes or Amazon or the Microsoft Store and look up The Wounded Blue, Service, Sacrifice, Betrayed. Thanks again for tuning in. We will see you next week, right here on the Voice of American Law Enforcement. Hello, this is Lieutenant Randy Sutton, the host of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. I am a 34-year police veteran. I am also the founder and CEO of an organization that stands behind injured and disabled law enforcement officers. It is called The Wounded Blue. Our website is thewoundedblue.org. We have produced a film. It is an important film. I urge you to watch it. The film details what happens when a police officer or law enforcement officer is shot or stabbed or beaten or disabled, seriously injured in the line of duty. Most people think they are taken care of medically and financially. The reality may be quite different. It is called The Wounded Blue, Service, Sacrifice, Betrayed. The film is available on Amazon, iTunes, and the Microsoft Store.
As we say, let the silent voices be heard. Shadow banning, editing, censorship, blocking, and adherence to political correctness are seen as serious threats to our God-given right to free speech. Suppressing free speech, the very cornerstone of our society, is not in the best interest of our listeners, readers, and those who provide our content. Welcome to the new era in communications. America Out Loud Talk Radio.
I'm going to ask you to go to thewoundedblue.org. That's www.thewoundedblue.org. That is the website for the organization that is the National Association for Injured and Disabled Police Officers. It is a support organization for these men and women who have given so much in the line of duty. We desperately need your help to raise money to get this movement going. And if you are a GoFundMe-er, go to GoFundMe, look up The Wounded Blue, and you can give there as well. But check it out, please, and also check out our film, The Wounded Blue, on Amazon.com.